Mrajuchtuden.
Mrajuchtuden.
Welcome to the Anonymous Eskimo Project, a program where I have candid conversations with guests about difficult but important Indigenous topics such as mental health, sobriety, recovery, and missing and murdered Indigenous people. These difficult topics need to be brought to the light, not only to educate, but to uplift our Indigenous relatives. Oyana for joining me. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. On today's show, I have Saima Chase. Saima is from Kotzebue, Alaska. She is Inupiaq, Sami, and Finnish. Saima is the mayor of Kotzebue, a wife and a mother to four. Saima is over 17 years sober. And on this show, Saima courageously shares her story for those who are still struggling. So guys, please help me welcome Saima Chase. Hi Saima, how are you?
I'm good. Actually, I stayed up really late working on fish, and I have a bunch of fish on my table I was working on, so.
Oh, dang. Hey, so everybody could get to know you. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, my name is Saima Chase, and I am from Kotzebue, Alaska. My mom is Jenny Harris. Her parents are the late Doc and Katuk Harris from Sisolik. So I grew up in, I think, the first 4 years of my life basically in Sisolik, and then every summer ever since then until my grandparents both passed away or couldn't live in camp year round. They used to live in camp year round. And then my dad, he's from Wisconsin. He's a full-blooded Finn. His name is Willie. Yeah, they have a homestead in Chickaloon above Palmer, and that's where they're living. And I live here in Kotzebue with my husband, John.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is awesome. You reached out to me, and I had no idea you were sober.
Yeah. I don't think about it that much because it's been so long. I think it's been almost, like, I want to say between 15 to 17 years that I've been sober.
Wow.
And I feel like I'm not doing enough to, like, encourage. I mean, I encourage my, like, close friends and, you know, and I talk to them about it, but I feel like I should do a little more because, I mean, I think, like, people don't talk about it as much, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And it seems like now, in the times now, a lot of people have been posting more about, you know, sobriety and their recovery and being proud of it, you know, because before it was like, you don't talk about that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Don't embarrass us or you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, man, 17 years. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I can only just imagine. Does it get easier?
Oh, man, it gets so much easier. Your patterns of what you're doing and your thought patterns are so much cleaner and so much, you think a different way when you're, like, I don't even think about it right now. Like, I don't even spend a minute of my time, like, even having a temptation or thinking about it.
You know, I kind of fell into what society showed how Native people drink. You know, I had John Proudstar on a couple episodes, you know, the guy from Reservation Dogs. Mm-hmm. And I thought that, okay, he's sober, so he must have drank before, you know. I never in my
mind thought, oh, he just didn't drink. But he just didn't drink because he saw people or his family members or people around him that were, you know, once strong, broken by drinking.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, I knew if I, you know, took that one sip that I probably, I don't know, he could have went down that path. He just never did it, you know. And I think some people think since you quit drinking, you must have had a rough time before, yeah. you know, yeah. like me, which it was the case, you know. But a lot of times some people are just curious or some people just don't like to drink. You know, they just yeah. stop.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes when people ask me, like, why I don't drink, like, I'll go on work trips and some people are like, you know, how come you don't drink? And I almost feel like it's a disappointing story because I'm like, I just don't. But I know that there's, like, deeper reasons behind it, but I just haven't yet, like, pinpointed them. Sometimes I feel like the statistics against natives who become alcoholics scare me. And I know that I'm half, so it's like there's three of us sisters, and you know if you look at the statistics, it's scary, especially people who are full native. I think don't have even the makeup in their body or even in their DNA to process that alcohol, like mm-hmm. like people from European people, they've had generations and generations of exposure. And we haven't. So it's like, that to me is like really scary. And even though my dad's a Finn, you know, he's part of that European descent and they've been exposed to alcohol for a long time. His dad was a raging alcoholic. So it's scary. It's to me, I'm like the everything is pointed against you when you think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think a lot of people dismiss that genetic part of it too, you know?
Oh yeah, I think so too.
And, you know, I totally believe it because one of my guests was saying our ancestors never had that, you know? I think the strongest type of alcohol was fermented fruit or berries or something like that, you know? Not that processed strong alcohol that the Europeans have.
Or grain yeah. alcohol. Yeah. Like we were never exposed to that.
Yeah. And people don't know that. They just see, you know, like sadly today on the way home, I was getting Taco Bell for my kids, you know, so they can eat while I'm doing this. But sadly, there's a lot of native representation on the streets. You yeah. know, like I saw this, they were younger group of native people on the side. And one of them was, you know, throwing up. And I was like, oh, man, that's so sad. I don't know what to do. You want to help, you know, or do something. But at the same time, you have to let them do their own path. I think,
for sure. You know, I was scrolling through TikTok one day and something came up and it was a white guy and he was talking about his addiction and he said, you know, people talk about the gateway drugs or gateway activities to addiction. And he said, the gateway is not a drug or an activity. It's the trauma that's in your life. And I truly believe that. I'm like, and I was like totally invested in watching all his stuff because I was like, this is like amazing to hear because people are so closed-minded about what people go through, you know, surviving instead of thriving as a child or even as like a teenager. I'll give you an example in my family. My mom's older siblings all got sent out to like Mount Edgecombe, Chamawa, Copper Center, and they missed out on that parenting at that crucial age of like teenager, you know, just so crucial to be around your parents, especially as a native, you know, a native family. And my oldest uncle turned out good because he went into the army and he, you know, he did really good in that and he's not dysfunctional. But like a couple of my family members and their kids are alcoholics because I think they weren't taught that tough parenting. They were taught a different way. Like my mom, you know, she didn't coddle us. She didn't make excuses for us. She didn't she said, you know, you do something, you're going to live with the consequences. You're going to, you know, you get in trouble, you're going to pay for it, basically. There was respect. We had boundaries. And sometimes, obviously, like, I was the wild middle child. So obviously, like, I crossed a lot of that. But, like, she told me at one point, like, whatever you do, you're going to pay for it later. You know, whatever you do, like, as far as getting in trouble, whatever, you're going to end up paying for it later. And a lot of my older cousins didn't have that. Like, their parents would make excuses for them, you know, bail them out of jail all the time. Like, just, they didn't have that parenting like my mom did, because she went to high school here. Mm. And she had that parenting with her parents. And I seriously believe that a lot of that is from that. Anyways, back to, like, the gateway conversation. The guy was talking about, he said, you know, I wasn't neglected. I wasn't starved or anything. He said, but we had, both my parents were working, you know, both of them were low income. We never thrived. We just survived. And he said that was the trauma, I think, that, and he said, I forget his name. It was on TikTok, but he said, something to the effect of, my parents were so busy with, like, trying to pay bills, trying to work all these jobs, trying to just have us, you know, under a roof and have food, that they didn't really watch us, you know, we watched ourselves. And he said that was kind of how he learned how to basically, like, be bad and then turn into an addict. And he said it wasn't, there was no gateway drug, it was the trauma. And he talked about how his grandparents were, like, coal miners and, like, really poor, and, you know, and I feel like it was, like, the same thing. Like, it was the trauma that people saw or people went through that didn't process it, and then it kind of went on to their children.
Yeah, intergenerational trauma.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they don't, like, people are starting to talk about it now, but, like, back, you know, 15 years ago, nobody said anything about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now, like I said, we have these social media outlets like TikTok. TikTok is freaking awesome, man. Because there's so many, I mean, there's, you know, just, like, all the dances and stuff like that, too. But there's people on there that are, you know, sharing their stories of recovery and sobriety and healing from, like, mental health issues, just everything on there. And if you have an algorithm that pops those things up, like I have, like, Native people and, you know, sobriety and recovery that pops up a lot. And it's just amazing. But you are absolutely right about some people that we see going through these struggles on the street. We don't know what their mental health issues or trauma is. You know, they could be suffering deeply from something that happened to their whole family from generation to generation, you know?
Yeah, it's tough. And I didn't think about generational trauma until I was, like, a lot older. And I was like, man, I don't want that to be something that my kids have to carry as young adults. Mm-hmm.
Man.
And, you know, I think about it, and my oldest is, or our oldest is, she'll be 21. She's going to school full time at APU. She's working 12 and a half hour shifts at ANMC as a CNA. You know, she's busy, and I'm like, I'm so proud of her. And she tells me all the time, like, I think about how we grew up and how her friends grew up, some of her friends grew up, and how some of them are just, they're not thriving, you know, they're barely surviving, just barely paying the bills and not going to school anymore. And, you know, and it's not like I'm not financially pouring things into her. It's just the support, I think, that's there. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's something that, you know, she can come to me and talk to me, or I can help her problem solve little things here and there, or even big things. But it's the consistency, I think, like, because I don't drink, you know?
Yeah, when you have, like, that generational trauma with your family, even having, like you said, your aunts and uncles were part of that, the school, the what do you call that again?
Like, boarding school.
Yeah, the boarding school, that's generational trauma. And everything, like the epidemics, that smallpox and everything, where people lost family members and whole societies and stuff like that. That's passed down. But then there's the generational trauma in your family where maybe your parents were alcoholic and it was just passed down to you. And at some point, if you're wanting your kids to have a better life, you got to fix yourself and kind of stop that cycle, you know.
For sure. And I didn't think about it, you know, when I did quit drinking, I did like an eased approach to it. Like I was like, okay, I'm not going to drink during the work week. And that was easy, you know. And then I said, okay, I'm not going to drink liquor. And that was, to me, that was easy, you know. And then I said, okay, I'm only going to drink one night on the weekend, not Friday night and Saturday night. And then that was easy. And then all of a sudden it just turned into like, okay, I'm not going to drink. And I think having that kind of a phased, like eased in kind of approach to it helped maybe like miss it so much. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And when you did that, it seemed like it's almost like tapering off, huh?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like I told you, it wasn't like I was super dysfunctional or anything. Mm-hmm. I never missed work. I was just, you know, for the most part, I couldn't afford to drink as much as like some of my friends could. But just because I was a single parent and I was, you know, working and paying for rent and car and daycare and all this stuff. So it was like I had to really look at my priorities and be like, okay, I can't afford to go and spend $40 or $50 at the bars.
Yeah, it gets expensive. And I'll tell you what, man, at the end, I was looking for the strongest, cheapest thing just so I could drink. But what is the drinking culture in Kotzebue? How is that?
I feel like it really revolves around social events like softball and, you know, snow machine races and people like planning these barbecues or these, like, we're going to all go fishing, you know, springtime, I'll go fishing and then they'll all have a few beers or whatever. I mean, obviously there's people who are on the street and doing really poorly, but like for my generation, I think it's more around social events and visiting.
Is Kotzebue a wet community?
We're a local option, so we have a city-owned liquor store, and you have to have a permit to buy alcohol. So you have to apply for the permit. You can't have any, like, past alcohol convictions.
So it's kind of regulated then, huh?
Yeah, and then you can only purchase from the liquor store here. I mean, I guess you can order alcohol, and it goes to the liquor store, and then they have, like, a cap on how much you can get a day.
Mm.
So you can't go, like, buy a whole case of hard liquor in one day.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I don't exactly know the cap, though. I've never had a permit, so I don't know.
Oh, man. You know, Bethel tried that. Bethel tried to have liquor stores, but they shut those down.
Yeah.
Now they have that, I forget what it's called, where they sell beer and wine, the pizza place. And I think that's the only place. I don't know. But there's still, you know, bootleggers and, you know, people that sell after hours or whatever.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah. I believe it's still, and you know, if people want alcohol and they want it so bad, they're going to get it anywhere. And I don't like the liquor store being open. I kind of wish that we had a little bit more tight regulations, maybe, like, not being able to purchase so much, because I'm not sure exactly how much it is, but I think you can get like 2 bottles of wine, a bottle of liquor, and like a whole case of beer in one day or something. And I feel like that's a lot for one day.
Yeah, but, yeah. I mean, if you're gonna want to drink, you're gonna find it somehow, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence because I'm like, I can see some healthy relationships with alcohol, but I can also see unhealthy ones. So it's not.
Yeah, that's what I was saying before too, was like, you know, I play music and I play in bars and I play at events like weddings and stuff where there's alcohol served, and I'm not the alcohol police, you know. I'm not gonna go over there and slap the beer out of your hand and say don't drink alcohol, You know, because there's people who are normal people. They call them normies that that can have one drink and you know, stop after that. I'm not the one to say, hey, man, alcohol is not for everybody, you know. There's a fine line, I think, that's hard to navigate through that. But, like I said, I'm not the one who's going to judge everybody, you know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I feel the same way. And, like, I can see some healthy relationships with alcohol, but I can also see a lot of social issues and, you know, stuff like that. But really, if you take it away, is it going to change that much? It's probably going to get worse, maybe, in my opinion.
It's always going to be around, you know. There's always going to be social problems with alcohol and drugs. I don't think it'll ever go away, but there's ways that we can, like we're trying to do right now, is educate people that the different relationships that people have with alcohol, you know, because a lot of people are thinking, oh, this is about people that have been having really bad, rough lives with alcohol and they got sober, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're an example of somebody that would drink but didn't go through all that craziness like I went through, you know, and you just decided to, you know, stop drinking. And people need to hear these types of stories. And maybe some people are just curious about wanting to be sober. And they can hear you and say, hey, you know, their mind is clearer. And, you know, things are better, you know, things are better at home, you know, and maybe they'll try it, you know.
It's definitely a lot. People, I don't say like I have an easy life, but adding alcohol would, you know, add another thing that I would have to just worry about or manage, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Even just doing it socially is like, do I really want to manage those relationships where I'm like, hey, what are you doing tonight? You know, are you guys drinking over there or whatever? Or do I just want to, like, focus on myself and my home and my life, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I definitely do miss sometimes being involved in social stuff. But at the same time, I'm like, you know what? I'm old enough to just stay home and worry about my own business.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I still struggle with the fact that I consider alcohol and people that have quit drinking with, you know, all these bad traumas and everything like that. And it's good for me to hear, you know, people that maybe didn't go through all of that, that just decided to have a better life, you know?
Yeah, and have just, I feel like, every time I do something, like every time I get a new animal or something, I'm like, I'm just keeping myself so busy. It's not like I think like, oh, I have to do this or I'll crave alcohol or something. But I'm just like so busy all the time that I'm like, I don't even have time in the day to think about it. I'd rather drink two cups of coffee by myself or sit and drink a cup of tea or something than any alcoholic beverage.
You know, you, by not drinking and, you know, people know that you're not drinking, it seems like, I think you're automatically placed in that category where people kind of look to you. Have you ever had anybody approach you saying, hey, you know, how did you quit? Or can you help me? Have you ever had that interaction with people?
I've had friends who, like, they don't come straight, they're not straightforward with it, but they're kind of like, you know, they understand that their relationship with alcohol may need to change. And they kind of ask, you know, like I said, they're not straightforward. They're not like, how did you quit drinking? But mainly like, how do you keep busy? Or how do you do this? Or they'll ask me like, you're so busy all the time. Like, and I'm like, well, I don't, and I'll be straightforward. I don't drink. So it's like, I don't have, I'm not tired the next day or, you know, I don't have that even in my mind. Like, but I've had people come to me, but it's not really, maybe it's because I don't openly talk about it as much as I should to people. And I always tell my friends, like, I support healthy behaviors. And I'll support you, you know, if like, if you're going through a divorce, but I'm not going to put my well-being and my mental health on the line for something that is happening that's unhealthy. Like if somebody is just drinking and like bashing their ex or, you know, doing all kinds of stuff, I'm like, no, I have very set boundaries on like how I'm going to support you as a friend. I'm going to support your healthy behavior. Yeah, come over if you want to cut fish, or come over if you want to learn how to sew or something, but I'm not going to sit here and put my feelings or my life or my family on the line because somebody else is being unhealthy. And I think it's hard because that kind of makes me feel like some of my friends think I'm like unfriendly, but I can't put my mental health or my, you know, the time that I have with my family for somebody who's being unhealthy.
So if somebody came up to you and said, hey, I'm thinking of, you know, maybe quitting, or maybe I just want to slow down a little bit. If somebody was just thinking about that, what would you say to them, or how would you encourage them?
I would just tell them to look at the patterns of when they're drinking, maybe, and start to rethink how they can change. Like for me, it was like going out on the weekends with my friends and getting away from my child, who I was the only parent of at the time. And then I focused more of my energies to say, okay, my child's in daycare from 8 to 5. I'm at work from 8 to 5. Why would I spend my weekends away from her, you know? Mm. And maybe just like refocusing who you're spending your time with and who you're putting that energy into.
Yeah. Well, Saima, I really, really appreciate you reaching out and bringing the conversation of sobriety. And, you know, it's a touchy subject. And a lot of people are afraid to, you know, come out and talk about this kind of stuff. So I really appreciate your courage to reach out and wanting to, you know, talk about it more. And I applaud you for doing that, because now people are listening and maybe they're not, you know, wanting to say something about their sobriety or the struggles that they're going through, and they can hear your story and find some hope, you know? So, man, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having this. Yeah.
Well, that's all for today's show. I hope you, the listeners, found some inspiration, strength, and hope. Listen next week when I have another strong, courageous person on who is walking with us on this healing journey. This program is available as a podcast. You can hear this and many more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts or at anonymouseskimo.com. Join in the Anonymous Eskimo Project Friday mornings at 10 a.m. on KOTZ, 7:20 a.m. on your radio dial. KOTZ, public radio for Northwest Alaska and the Russian Far East. I'm your host, Ralph Sara. Biura!
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.